Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Squared Circle News. This is a special edition. My name is Vinny. This is brought to you by Suds in the Squared Circle. Today, this is just going to be released on audio. As a matter of fact, I may release it on video as well, just as a still image of the Suds in the Squared Circle logo, or the Squared Circle News logo. But either way, this is my interview with David Penzer, former WCW ring announcer, who's the only person that attended every single Monday Nitro and every single WCW Thunder, former ring announcer for TNA and Impact Wrestling. He just put out a book called Sitting Ringside, Volume One. It's David Penzer with Guy Evans. Guy Evans has been on the show a couple times, so we felt it necessary to interview David Penzer. So this is, I'm going to get into it now. We talk about his journey and part of stuff from the book. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Vinny from Suds and Squared Circle, Squared Circle News special edition. I am here with the former ring announcer for WCW and TNA, David Penzer. David, welcome. How are you today?
Very good. I'm doing good. Thank you for having me. Just had a book released, a half book and half autobiography, and people seem to like it so far, knock on wood. So just wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is called Sitting Ringside Volume One, and you did have a co-writer with you, Guy Evans, who's been on the show multiple times. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into the wrestling business.
Well, when I was 11 years old, in 1977, so do the math. I had, for whatever, I know what reason, but I don't need to go into the dirty details. But my cousin Jeff was staying with us for a while, and I was sharing a room with him. And on a Saturday, he said, "Hey, man, let's watch wrestling." And I said, "What's wrestling?" And he said, "You've never seen Florida wrestling?" And I said, "I have no idea what you're talking about." He put it on at 12 o'clock on Channel 6 Saturday. And I saw Dusty Rhodes, Superstar Billy Graham, Joe LaDuke, Steve Kern, Ernie Ladd, Ox Baker. And I was hooked immediately. I was mesmerized. I never in a million years would have thought that I could, be a part of the business. Especially at this high level. But I like to tell people my journey was improbable, if not impossible. So many things had to happen that shouldn't have happened. Wrestling in 1990 was a lot different than it is today, and they didn't just let you hang out in the back with the Rock and Roll Express and the Junkyard Dog, the Four Horsemen and the Road Warriors and Sting. If you didn't have some sort of wrestling, if you weren't a wrestler or a referee, or maybe grew up in, your father was the booker or something like that. I had a lot of luck and a lot of hard work, and 30 years later, I could say I've lived my dream on a high level, and I'm blessed, and I don't take it for granted. I get goosebumps thinking about it.
And it's great that you're able to put all your stories and everything into the book. And the fact that it's volume one, I assume that we're going to get a volume two at some point. But the
Yeah, this one ends around the time WCW went out of business.
okay.
A little bit after that. I don't want to give away the ending of my book, but
Right.
that's one we're going to go into just a little bit of background about my book. The way this whole started is I was cleaning my closet about a year and a half ago. Not my closet, my office. And I found in my desk that I had a file that had all these old WCW rare, never before seen formats and internal memos, hundred pages of them.
Wow.
And so, including the last Nitro that's never been seen before. So I immediately thought that A, I want to, find a way to get this out there so fans can appreciate it. And B, I want to, from being honest, find a way to monetize that. because the real estate business, and I'm a realtor in Tampa, had slowed down a lot, and so everything helped. So I took a picture of the W of a like random WCW Saturday Night format from 1995, and put it on Twitter and said, "What do you guys think of this? And how's the best way for, you know, what do you think it's worth? You know, what do you think the best way to get it out was?" And immediately, within like an hour, Guy Evans, who wrote the Nitro book, and also Eric Bischoff's second autobiography, PM'd me and said, "We need to do a scrapbook." And I said, "All right, sounds good." So we sent out the you know, agreement and all that, and we started talk. We were gonna like tell stories in the scrapbook, you know what I mean? It wasn't just gonna be the format, but so we started stories. I started telling my story, and about, I don't know, 3 months in, he calls me and says, we're doing two books now. And I said, yeah, volume one and volume two. And he said, no, we're still doing volume two, but we're doing the scrapbook plus now, instead of just the scrapbook, we're doing your autobiography.
Okay.
And I said, you sure that's a good idea? You know, I don't know. He said, you don't understand, because you're humble, because I am pretty humble. I'm just, you know, I'm so lucky, you know, that I got to do what I do and be a part of what I got to be a part of, that he said, you don't understand how amazing your story is. And those are his words, not mine. And I said, all right, well, you know, they're probably going to buy it for the formats and then maybe read the autobiography and dig it. And he goes, that's okay. That's fine. So basically it's two books in one. It's, you know, my story, all the insight from WCW, you know, what, you know, from the watching basically sitting ringside, as the book title goes, you know, the Monday Night Wars and the ups and the downs and the end, and the personalities involved and my thoughts on them. And so that's what we're doing. And then you get all those rare and never before seen formats. You could get the book on Amazon.com. If you want something extra, like say if you want an actual printed out Nitro format, I still have the one that's in the book, but if you want one printed out like the one that I saved, there's upgrades for those, for stuff like that. You could go to davidpenzerbook.com, davidpenzerbook.com. And you know, for example, you go to a start, like a Starcast or a WrestleCon, and you could have Sting and Ric Flair sign that main event on the format of that last match.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, that's something I've been thinking about doing.
Yeah.
So, I'm hoping they don't charge me as much as they might charge other people, but yeah, so that's the overview of the book. And, appreciate you giving me the opportunity to let people know about it.
Yeah. So let me ask you, you were the only person to appear at every single WCW Monday Nitro and every single WCW Thunder. How is that, you know, a notch in your cap when the wrestling business itself changes so much, whether it's announcers, wrestlers, even authority figures? The fact that you were the one constant, that's got to be something to be proud of.
Well, yeah, I got my foot in the door, you know, which was, you know, I call that my journey to get in the wrestling business, improbable, if not impossible. Mm-hmm. But once I was able to get a little hair on my pinky toe in the door, you know, I was not going to let the opportunity go away. I worked my butt off. I actually never missed a show I was scheduled to be at, including house shows.
Okay.
Towards the end, they did hire a backup guy, because I was, and you'll see in the book the story, but I was helping the book and produce WCW Saturday Night with Jimmy Hart and Arn Anderson and Tony Schiavone at the end, when you know, the head office, the management didn't want to deal with that show. They had files of television to write with all these egos involved. Mm-hmm. So we hired somebody to do that show, and I did. I was at go position, and then you know, he did like one house a month for me. At that time, I was exhausted. But actually, there's only one time in 30 years that I actually missed a taping. I was a TV taping I was scheduled for, and that was a couple of years ago for Impact Wrestling. COVID kicked my ass for about 6 weeks, and I just couldn't get. But other than COVID kicking my ass, I've made every television taping I was ever booked for. I take it seriously. I go out there and do the best job I can, and that's all you could do. You know, a lot of times you got no control of your fate.
Yeah,
you just got to be consistent and show up and work hard, and you know, that gets noticed, and you got to hope that that's enough.
No, absolutely, and I agree with you. I've never been in the wrestling business myself. I'm just a fan, but you know,
well, I'm just a fan. By the way, I'm just a fan too. I want to make that clear. I'm still a fan. Still the same guy that I was when I saw Championship Wrestling from Florida in 1977.
And that's the best way, you know, as some, you know, when you get into the business, to stay a fan. You know, there are always those rumors out there about certain guys, like, you know, Goldberg wasn't a fan, he just wanted to do it for the money, or Brock Lesnar isn't a fan, he just wanted to do it for the money. But when you are a fan and you come in and you're able to get on that other side, you know, whether it's performing or whether it's announcing or anything, the keeping the fandom, that you could hear the passion. And you recently pointed that out for one of the current ring announcers, Samantha, oh gosh, of course I'm going to forget her name at this point.
Irvin.
Yeah, Samantha Irvin, the ring announcer for WWE Monday Night Raw, and was the ring announcer for WrestleMania. And you gave her a huge compliment recently.
Yeah, she actually PM'd me, DM'd me on Facebook, on Twitter, and thanked me for it. Said it meant a lot coming from somebody like me, which is humbling as hell. But yeah, she brings in, I said this before, I'm not talking about crying at the end of Cody's finish. Everybody mm-hmm. was emotional for that. She I brings out an emotion in her introductions that I don't think I've ever heard before. Mm-hmm. It's very unique. It gets you more invested in the match. It's almost the same, but totally different than Michael Buffer saying, "Let's get ready to rumble." Mm-hmm. So Michael Buffer has a catchphrase that gets everybody excited and invested for the main event of the show. She doesn't have a catchphrase. She has a tone and an emotion about her that gets people invested. You're into watching this because you could hear that she's into announcing it and she's into watching it. And it's just infectious. Mm-hmm. As you can see, you know, they normally don't let ring announcers, they don't say their name normally, or you know, people are now called, the wrestlers are calling her out on live television, and deservedly so. You know, I don't know what the end game is for her. You know, I know she loves the wrestling business, but I don't know if in a year or two, if Hollywood comes calling, she might answer the door. But if she has any kind of longevity as a ring announcer in WWE, I think she's an automatic Hall of Famer ring announcer, right next to Howard Finkel, who's the greatest of all time in my mind.
No, I could completely understand and agree with you on that. So let me ask you, like, for me as a fan, getting to go to a Monday Night Raw, like, I was in Philly. I went to all five of the shows, WrestleMania weekend. For me, that was just fantastic, you know, being able to be there live. For somebody in your position as a fan, and then you're also working there, do you ever, you know, does it ever not give you goosebumps when you're there? Being there for certain things like Hulk Hogan creating the NWO and turning it back to the beach, or, you know, some of the other stuff, David Arquette winning the world title, or even Goldberg beating Hogan at the Georgia Dome. Do you ever not get goosebumps because you're there working, or do you always have that fandom that it's like, holy crap, I'm here witnessing history?
Absolutely. Just what you said. Oh, I mean, even the last match I did for Impact Wrestling which was the last Impact show ever, TV show ever done, because now they're TNA. Right. The show's still called Impact. But in December was Josh Alexander versus Will Ospreay. And I'm sitting there announcing that and watching that going, holy shit, 30 years later, and I'm still, you know, they're legends of the future. You know what I mean? Two of the best in the business, you know, and I'm in the ring announcing them in the, you know, in the main event and, you know, sitting there watching it, sitting ringside, so to speak. And, yeah, I've never, it's just, it blows my mind. Every time it blows my mind, thinking back to it, blows my mind, thinking about all the people that I grew up as a fan of, you know, that I got to become friends with. It's just the whole story. It's a crazy journey. And I just, it just puts a big smile on my face all the time. So yeah, it's incredible.
That is awesome. Just to be able to always have that excitement. So not to give any spoilers of your book, I am going to be ordering it, with my next paycheck. But I, you know, not to give any spoilers or anything, but is there anything you could share from the book in terms of any, you know, stories that are in there that you know, you don't mind sharing?
I mean, I talk a lot about my journey and I talk a lot about the things I got to do. For example, Kevin Sullivan was one of the guys who took me under his wing when he was a booker. And, you know, we would drive down the road together, me and him and Nancy and Pee Wee Anderson, the referee, and I'd be in the back seat and Kevin would be in front. And every once in a while, and I don't know if he did it because, you know, he just thought it was amusing that ring announcer was being his stooge, writing down his ideas for him, or whether he just legitimately wanted to get me involved because he thought I had something to offer. But, you know, because back then there was no cell phones, there's no internet, you know, we had to pass the time away. We had to, you know, rib each other. So he would hand me a pad and he'd say, Penzer, write down Chris Jericho defends the TV title. And I'd say, okay. He goes, who do you think would be a good opponent? This was for Nitro. I'm actually writing out Nitro.
Wow.
And he already knew what he wanted, but he was just trying to get me involved or ribbing me, or like I said, probably both. And and I would say, Eddie Guerrero? And he'd go, well, that would be a great match, but you know, Eddie, you know, he's in a different program and we don't want Chris Jericho to drop the belt. So we don't want him doing a job while he's of a different program. And I'd check that in the back of my head. I'd be like, okay, you know, somebody's in another program. You're not going to beat them, you know, in just a championship match with no promotion.
Right.
So I said, how about the Inferno? He goes, I think Disco would be great. And so, you know, I'm not saying he wasn't already there. I'm not saying I wrote Nitro. What I am saying is I got to be a part of the process. And when I was younger, when I was a teenager, I used to put my own territory, much like Tony Khan did, except mine never got put on TBS and TNT. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm this little kid who wasn't smart to wrestling and who was enamored by it, and I'm booking territory. And all of a sudden I have a small, tiny little part of writing out what people are seeing on their television on Monday night, watched by 5-7 million people. I mean, you can't make that kind of stuff up. That's just super right. Cool. And I want to thank him, by the way, for writing the foreword to the book. He wrote the foreword. He was a big influence on me in a lot of ways. It's kind of a fait accompli because he was at my first, the first wrestling show I ever went to live was May of 1977 at the Fort Lauderdale National Armory. The main event was Ernie Ladd versus Ox Baker, and Kevin was in the semi-main teaming with Mike Graham. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it would kind of ironic that our journey came full circle from being on my first show as a kid to taking me under his wing as an adult, to staying friends after the WCW went out of business, and then to write the foreword of a book I never thought I was going to write. But that's just an example. You know, we have a whole chapter on the announcers. They used to have a tour bus for the announcers to all get dressed in and stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, I talk about all the different announcers and their personalities and the funny, tell some funny stories about different people. You know, think about it. We had probably the best group of announcers in one company probably ever will be established. We had, Tony Schiavone and Mean Gene, absolute legend. Bobby Heenan, absolute legend. Larry Zbyszko, absolute legend. Mike Tenay, absolute legend. There's so many more. Scott Hudson came in at one point, and great guy and talented. And so I got to sit there on that tour bus for about 2-3 hours a show. And I just got to listen, telling stories from the road, to them talking about what they thought of the product. To them, then after the shows, me and Mean Gene and Bobby would get a drink at the hotel bar, and then we told more stories. And I mean, I say in the book, and I mean it, there was a time when I was in college right before I flunked out, and I would watch Tuesday Night Titans. I don't know if you remember that show.
I do. Yeah.
Which was like a wrestling talk show, and I would Tuesday Night Titans with a friend of mine. We get stoned and watched it, which is probably why I dropped out. And of course now it's not a big deal. And I haven't smoked it since I was in college, but I digress. God, I would say to my friend Jeff, I'd say, man, if I could have a drink with anybody in the entire world, I would just love to have a drink and a brief conversation with Bobby the Brain Heenan. How funny is he? And, I just said it, kind of, out of the blue, and I meant it. I still have a list of somebody, if I had my choice, I could have a drink with. I still sort of have that, and changes every once in a while. But Bobby got checked off, and Mean Gene got checked off. Man, got to be friends with my heroes, and it's just amazing. So the only thing that I could do is give you my is to give the reader my insights into the ride. From my point of view, my vantage point of view, which was not part of managed most of the time, which was just the ring announcer. Now, later on, I did take up other duties towards the end. Mm-hmm. But, just my vantage point, what I thought might have been the right, a better thing to do, what I thought might have been a worse thing to, just my opinion, I thought Eric might have, been strong at, and maybe not as strong at. And in hindsight, I think Eric would agree. This book is not burying anybody. Mm-hmm. I do speak bluntly, Vince Russo and his booking, style. I want to make it clear. And I've talked about this a bunch of times since the book came out. I have nothing personal against Vince Russo. I hope he, has a wonderful life and all that, but his vision of what pro wrestling should be is not my vision of what pro wrestling should be. And you know what? That's okay.
Yeah.
But, look, I mentioned this in an earlier interview today. Brett Lauderdale, I think the world of him. He's a great, great, great businessman. Mm-hmm. But for me, once you take out a fluorescent light bulb and break it, you lost me.
Yeah.
But,
I'm the same way.
But that doesn't mean that there's not a obvious group of people that love that. And that's fine. We're so tribalist these days on social media.
Yes.
I don't care what you like. If you like people, rolling around in broken glass, that's cool. I don't. I just don't think Vince was very good at the job he was hired to do. As a matter of fact, I thought he was the worst ever, if I'm being blunt. But, other than that, this is not a burial about anybody. There were things in there when I was telling the stories to Guy Evans, and he would put him in there. And, we were reading before we released it, I would say, there's no actual reason to like say this person's name, this guy was messed up at a show because he did too much, drugs. In the stories that I would tell him, I would mention the name. But then when I read it, I was like, there's no reason. It was one of the wrestlers, It has to do with the story, but the name doesn't have to do with the where the wrestling business was in that year. It's just the situation that was happening a lot more. And that was hurting the product. So, I think it's a fun journey. Plus, all those formats are a blast. I still look at those like every night before I go to bed. I scroll through the book and look at all those formats and those internal memos and stuff. It's really cool stuff. And once again, you go to Amazon, or if you want some of the extras, you go to davidpenzerbook.com.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, again, like I said, I'm going to be picking one up with my next paycheck, and I'm definitely going to do one of the
Thank you.
bigger packages, because I, as a wrestling fan who grew up during the Monday Night Wars, I definitely want to get my hands on some of those formats just to have them.
Yeah, we got the format when David Arquette became the world champion. The funny thing about that, and until I went back and looked at it, I had no remembrance of this, is that on the format I have, which was the original format from the production meeting, David Arquette was not supposed to win the world title.
Really?
Yeah, it had somebody else going over and retaining their title. I think it was Jeff Jarrett, and so that was I remember now that I think about it, now I've thought about it, I remember that being a last minute decision. I know a lot of people think that that was a bad decision. I'm not going to say it was the greatest decision ever made, but the way I look at things is, you look at non-wrestlers that the world title was put on. You got David Arquette that got us on the front page of USA Today and got tons of publicity on Inside Edition and all those shows. You got Vince Russo that got us nothing. So if you're gonna point to somebody winning the world as a bad move, you could say they both were bad moves, but at least Arquette got us something that we desperately needed at the time. So,
And
and
it
a
played
funny
into the
story
voice.
is, as I've gotten to know David Arquette a little bit through wrestling that Brian Knobbs puts on, and he always has Arquette on the shows, and he was on Ar David Arquette was on my podcast for about 2 hours when I had my City Ringside podcast. And the last time I saw David Arquette at a Legends of Wrestling show, his wife came up to me and she said, "I just want to thank you so much." And I said, "For what?" And she said, this is a little preview of volume two, by the way. She said, "For the longest time, he thought that he killed DW, and he wore that around as something that really upset him, that really gnawed at him." And he goes, "You've been able to explain to him and make him understand that he didn't ruin WCW. That, it wasn't as bad as he thought it was, and it's a big monkey off his back, so to speak. And I really appreciate that you did that for him because I love him. And all I did is tell the truth, in my opinion, but that was really cool, and I'm glad I could do that. And he's still, to this day, if I send him a text, which I don't very often because I don't want to bother people, but he'll text right back, and just a super guy. And hey, he bought the bar and pizza for the entire company after the show where he won the world title. So I don't, God knows what the bar bill was.
I can only
I
imagine.
mean, you're talking everybody in production, every wrestler, every referee, I mean, the entire hotel was filled with everybody that worked on that show. They all came down to the bar, and it was on David Arquette.
And the other thing that's really cool that I found, that's been brought out, not too terribly recently, but when he did win the title, any money he made from WCW, he donated to Brian Pillman's family, because this was right after Brian Pillman passed.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
Yeah,
David
no,
Arquette.
he was a great person, and he was a huge fan. He got to live his dream, and then the fans got him to believe that look, he wasn't your normal world champion. And if it happened today, nobody would bat an eye about it. It's a publicity, you know what I mean? That it was just people took it a little bit more seriously. That belt had a lineage to it. So I can see people getting upset. But then you look at all the rest of the crack that we were doing around the same time, and it wasn't anything like the business that we all grew up watching. So why should we expect those that honor to continue when we're put, quite frankly.
No, you're absolutely right. And but anyway, so I know we're running low on time, and I know you've got other engagements. So I did want to just again thank you for coming on. Again, the book is at not only Amazon, but there are packages. Go to davidpenzerbook.com, and that's where you can get Sitting Ringside Volume 1. And there are four great packages. One of them is just a book, but there are three other packages that you can get that include books being signed by both David Penzer and Guy Evans. And then the formats and scripts and other bundles as well. David, thank you so much for coming on. you are a class act, and being from one wrestling fan to another, thank you for making Mondays enjoyable with your ring announcing, and you know, just thank you for being humble about it.
Thank you. It was great to be on your show, and it was an absolute honor. I pinch myself every day that I do what I got to do, and you know, I was so lucky, and for you to even say thank you to me, you know, God, I was living my dream. So much respect, and I appreciate it.
All right, thank you so much.
All right.
And anyways, if you want to get the book, it is available at Amazon, but if you want to get any more packages, you can go to davidpenzerbook.com, and there you could get just the book there, but there are also other options you can get. There is option number two, which is a signed edition with signed Last Nitro format. In that one, you'd get David Penzer and Guy Evans will each sign your book, and they will sign a historic piece of wrestling memorabilia for you. The last ever format script for WCW Monday Nitro from 3/26/01. That was the one that was the only Nitro produced by the WWE right after the sale. Option number three is called Insane Bundle Number One. It's a hardcover book signed by David Penzer and Guy Evans. Final WCW Nitro format signed by Penzer and Evans. The April 26, 2000 WCW Thunder format when David Arquette won the world title signed by Penzer and Evans. The September 25th, 2000 Nitro format when Vince Russo won the world title, signed by Penzer and Evans, an invitation to a group Zoom call with Penzer and Evans, and then free U.S. and worldwide shipping. And if that's not enough for you, the option four, which is Insane Bundle Number Two, hardcover book signed by Penzer and Guy Evans, final Nitro format, again signed by both, the Thunder with Arquette winning format signed by both, Nitro with Russo winning format signed by both, five additional signed formats, including some that are not in the book, the free ebook version, a free DVD of never-before-seen WCW website footage, and an invitation to an individual Zoom call with both David Penzer and Guy Evans, and then free shipping as well. So those are the, and you can also get just a book, but those are the four options available at davidpenzerbook.com. And you could also go to GuyEvansBooks.com as well for those same bundles. And then, or if you want to go to Amazon. But either way, I want to thank David Penzer for coming on the show. It's been great to talk to him. And it's been busy with, you know, his schedule doing all his media appearances. But I definitely thank him for coming on Squared Circle News. And again, thank you, David Penzer. Go pick up your copy of Sitting Ringside Volume 1, WCW, David Penzer with Guy Evans. Have a great day, everybody.